This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chung Han this morning. And before we jump into the business pages of today's local papers, let's take a look at what's happening on the breakfast grill in about 20 minutes or so. Today, Chuang, you're going to be speaking with Yuji Kusunoki, the president of Rakuten Securities. Rakuten is a familiar name for me, but more in the e-commerce space. So what is Rakuten Securities all about?
Correct. So what they do is that the financial services and specifically the online discount broking side of the e-commerce chain, the Japanese e-commerce chain. And what they do is they try and parlay the millions and billions of subscribers and visitors to the e-commerce site and say, hey, well, you know, you're buying detergent, you're buying, you know, cosmetics and eyeliner. How about some stocks as well? And that's what they do. They try and, you know, they try and divert some of this traffic into the financial services.
Interesting, I have to say, because
from eyeliner to equities,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's a very good headline there, right there. I would have to say, though, the kind of target market that they would be the demographic they'd be targeting would probably be younger, those already, you know, interested in commerce,
correct,
willing
tech
to
savvy
trade. Yeah, willing to trade online. So quite an interesting strategy. Let's find out more with Yuji Kusunoki, president of Rakuten Securities, and what they are doing here in Malaysia. More on that on The Breakfast Grill at 8 o'clock. But U.S. authorities have come out to say that they intend to file criminal charges against Joe Lowe in connection with 1MDB. In fact, authorities there, authorities in the US are saying that they believe that this 1MDB case could be the largest financial frauds ever.
Now, there is a big distinction to be made here, and this is why we're talking about the story today, because if you recall, July 20th of last year, when then U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, you know, held that big press conference, that was specifically for civil forfeiture complaints. In other words, it was a civil suit. But now, according to this Wall Street Journal story, this is actually going to, well, again, if those sources are correct, now granted, the Wall Street Journal is a very reputable paper. Of course, that depends on who you ask. No, but still, according to this story by the Wall Street Journal, it's now going to be criminal charges that could potentially be filed against Joe Lowe. So big crossover there.
So that civil suit, that was in July last year.
July last year.
Goodness.
Yeah, time flies.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a criminal probe now. We're talking about criminal charges.
Yeah, right? Correct.
If it graduates to that point, and so the story goes, the financier Joe Lowe has not been in, you know, Europe and North America. In fact, he's been in Asia, Taiwan and Thailand specifically. And his yacht, I think it's worth something like $180 million or something. It's, you know, the name of this yacht belongs to ostensibly belongs to Joe Lau. The name of the yacht is called
Joe Lau. Joe Lau.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Okay,
Lau. Low tech Joe, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the name of his yacht is called Equanimity, right? Which in plain English means to stay calm and composed. And there's an email, well, rather a WhatsApp message sent by Joe Lau to his friends at the end of last year. New Year's message. It's quite interesting because it says that, you know, our captain has gone through turbulent times. He's entered this, you know, the storm with different people. He's come out with different people, and he steered the ship with, you know, elegance and composure into calmer waters. Who exactly the captain is, we don't know. But it's quite cryptic.
Okay.
Now, but if you read this story, though, it goes into so much detail, though. Again, a testament to the resources that the Wall Street Journal has, you know, whereby tracking even Mr. Low or Lau's whereabouts there, you know, tracking him down to the Peninsula Hotel in Shanghai.
And where his boat is moored in Phuket.
Right. And
paying $20,000 for the privilege.
Yeah.
Paying for it in baht.
Right. You know, and so even down to those details about, you know, even, yeah, where and all the luxuries that he's been in. I mean, going back to the hotel, he's been described as a long-term resident in Peninsula Hotel. You know, it goes back to, if you recall over the last few years when you've got, say, U.S., various authorities around the world trying to track down Joe Lowe, but then here you've got it in black and white.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Have you stayed in the Peninsula? I haven't, but it's much better than a poke in the eye.
Are you asking me that kind of question, la? Hey. Hello, this boy from Peninsula Hotel.
Simply.
Motel, maybe.
I am very curious to see how the prosecution plans will pan out, because I mean, for everything that's happened with the DOJ, you know, with the civil suit, nothing has happened since, right? So since July last year. And if they should go ahead with criminal charges, it's going to be really interesting to see how authorities in Malaysia respond to that, given that we've cleared this scandal of any wrongdoing?
Right. Now, I think that the distinction can still be made, you know, when you see what's happening in Singapore. You know, they are going after, you know, the transgressions that happen within their jurisdiction. Whereas with according to this story, with the U.S. authorities, likewise, they are also going after, you know, what U.S.-based assets, right? I think since that July 20th press conference, they've had to tweak somewhat, their allegations again in that civil suit. But if it does cross over to the criminal side, that's a whole different story. Continuity, I think, is key as well, because when you consider the fact that Loretta Lynch is no more in the hot seat.
Oh, she's not there anymore.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Right.
You know, so it's now Jeff Sessions. You know, whether the Attorney General over there has the same willpower to pursue this case, at least on the civil side.
But, you know, Singapore, recently we read about Singapore giving that lifetime ban to the ex-BSI bankers. And then right after that, I think there was a lot of noise being made to the government to say, hey, look, Singapore's taking action. Singapore's charging people. What are you doing about the 1MDB case? And was it Datuk Johari Ghani? Datuk Sri Johari Ghani, who came out to say, well, what we're telling you is only half of the picture. There's actually more to the picture with 1MDB than you realize.
Much more.
I thought that was a bit of a cryptic
bit like
teaser.
An iceberg, right? Small at the top and big at the bottom. Right.
Well, then I hope that the full picture is revealed. If, you know, all the cards are on the table with investigations from the
DOJ. You know how long we waited for the Bank Negara probe, right? 30 years. So
26 years.
So
yeah.
Before our lifetimes, hopefully.
No, I mean, again, if I just may interject, you know, I still contend, though, yes, you know, while... I mean, don't get me wrong, I want to be absolutely clear here, you know, don't send me hate tweets and emails. You know, I, like many other concerned Malaysians, and, you know, I believe, you know, even UMNO officials have posed this question as well. You know, they do want to get to the bottom of this. They do want to know, you know, what really happened with 1MDB. Now, granted, UMNO has since then gone on a roadshow, you know, giving them and hosting Q&A sessions, and they have done that. But then at the same time, I think, you know, any concerned Malaysian would want to know what ultimately happened. But at the same time, while we still have those questions unanswered at this point in time, you know, I think it's also important to recognize the complexity and the intricate nature of the 1MDB and its investigations. You see what's happening with the Swiss, Singapore, the US, Malaysia, even to New Zealand, right? We saw the news flow with Jolo's family getting a small win in the New Zealand legal system there. So it's very, very much a worldwide thing. I think we might have to wait a little bit more before, at least for Malaysians, we'll find out, you know, the complete picture, I think.
Well, there's also another big piece of news that caught our attention this morning. The government has tabled a supplementary supply bill seeking an additional allocation of 3.08 billion ringgit for 2016 from the Consolidated Fund. And this is on top of the 267 billion ringgit already allocated in Budget 16. So this is an additional supplementary budget once again. However, it's not as big as the supplementary budgets from previous years, but I really hate that we have to keep coming, you know, like that we still have this idea of a supplementary budget. Whatever was allocated in Budget 2016 is not enough. You have to come back and ask for more money.
Well, apparently, you know, we have actually had two supplementary budgets every year since 2009.
And in fact, we've gone back for more money every year since the late 1990s. Without interruption, okay?
Yeah.
So what kind of budget is it if you keep blowing your budget, right? Imagine you run a household, yeah, Melissa,
yes.
And you're supposed to spend $10 a month and you keep going back, you know, to your spouse every month for more money. He's going to get a bit knocked off, isn't he?
Well, I do sometimes blow my budget, and that's why I have credit card
operationally.
Debt.
Operationally.
Which is a problem, right? You don't want the government to blow the budget because it speaks of a lack of fiscal discipline. You know, you're not able to project how much you're going to spend, and that the projection was wrong in the first place. And then you have to go back and ask for more money, which could result in whether you have the resources to fulfill that.
No, yeah, sure, it makes sense. You know, I think at the same time, we have to be aware of the, you know, larger global macro factors that are at play here. You know, for example, no one saw or predicted the steep decline of oil prices that we've seen since 2014, 2015, right? And now, granted, in 2015, 2016, the government had to come up with revised budgets. This year, we're not seeing that. And also, we are seeing a smaller supplementary budget. The smaller supplementary budget that's in the news right now is for Budget 2016, not 2017. So we have seen those kind of deviances being
love the choice of word, by the way.
Narrowing somewhat, you know. But then at the same time, I totally agree. You know what? When you see these kind of headlines, with the frequency of these supplementary budgets, it does pose some serious questions about, say, our fiscal consolidation path, right? Whether or not we are as stringent as the government makes us or makes it out to be.
In the past 7 years, Han, we have gone back. The government has gone back to us for more than 100 billion ringgit in additional expenditure. So they've asked for a supplementary budget of over 100 billion ringgit. That's over 7 years. The highest was in 2012 at 26 billion ringgit. So granted, in comparison, 3 billion may not be as much as 26 billion. But I'm wondering whether, what started out as, say, a precedent, never ever have we ever asked for a supplementary budget, but suddenly that's become the norm now. Allah, do whatever lah for budget 16 or budget 17, we can ask for more later.
It's this addiction to debt, isn't it? This addiction to huge capital, mega infrastructure projects that, usually cost more than they're budgeted for, and a lot of people by the wayside getting money into their pockets. But this is very important because the government wants to achieve fiscal parity by 2020, which means that it's got to make as much money as much as it spends. So it's got to get to a neutral spending basis by 2020. Last week, Joe Ghani, the second finance minister, said we're not going to hit that target. We're going to take at least 2 more years to get to that target. And this is exactly why, because the government spends more than it earns every single year.
Okay, I'm going to ask a somewhat unpopular question here. Do you think the rakyat has a part to play in this? Because, say, for example, when you see the budget cuts that has happened this year, right, there's been plenty of uproar, when it comes to, say, the education sector or the healthcare space, right? And subsequently, government spending in those areas had to be trimmed. And then when they do that, the people then make a lot of noise. Do you think we should be perhaps more cognizant and be aware of the constraints, again, not just domestic factors, but global factors as well, and then say, okay, we'll take one for the team right now, at least for the near term?
Well, you're right. And the rakyat have got every, right to oppose increases in costs, especially at a time when wage growth is not as fast as one would like. But, you would also want to see the government taking its own steps to reduce costs and to not have as many infrastructure projects or as many people on its payroll.
Earlier in the morning, I was just talking to Julian Ng about how the papers are covering Lima 2017. And in it, the Prime Minister is saying that he wants more, a higher allocation for defence spending on equipment. He wants to modernise some of Malaysia's armed forces. In fact, he has allocated, 26 billion ringgit for this? So increased defence spending?
Yeah, now, real quick, this is for the 11th Malaysia plan. So it's 26 billion over an extended period of time, at least for a few years. Whereas for budget 2017 alone, as we spoke on yesterday's program, and you can check out the podcast on our website, bfm.my, and also our new app, Che, nice plug there. For this year, budget 2017, it's only about 15 billion ringgit, which is lower than the amount allocated for the Ministry of Defence for last year. So, yes, overall, there's money to be spent. And I do see the need, but, whether we are prudent and efficient in that spending, I think that's a big question mark. Eh?
Very good point. We've got the 8 o'clock news bulletin, and after that, The Breakfast Grill. Yuji Kusunoki, President of Rakuten Securities. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.